Kardama and you have Krishna, and there's something in between, right? His material desire. So he wants to deal with material desire in such a way that he can get to Krishna, right? But because that's so sincere in that endeavor, that Krishna comes even here in the middle as his material desire.
Really, you consider material desire because he's an acharya? Even if you say
the acharya is here to teach us what? You are a soul situated on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, and so he simply has to show you how to get from your neutral state being marginal to the point of actually being in the fire of internal potency, right? That's all you have to learn. That's it. Nothing to do with your conditioned nature. How to connect it, how to get rid of it, how to get out of it, right? Nothing. Zero. That you have to learn. So, who are they going to get you to learn that from? Ronald McDonald? From the Acharyas. Okay. So therefore the Acharyas come and go through all these pastimes that they deal on the material platform. Because for them, it isn't material. It's inferior nature of Krishna is it's connected to Krishna. Therefore, he sees the process of brahmacharya connected to Krishna. He sees the process of finding a wife as connected to Krishna. Of the wife is connected to Krishna. Right? Means one of the mantras in the marriage, right, is after the girl is given away and the first purification is there. Then he takes the girl to the fire. After saying he's received her from the fire, he says she belongs to Vishnu. He doesn't say she belongs to me. She belongs to Vishnu. It's right there. So, therefore, then the actual yogi sees his fulfilling the material need in connection with Krishna, so it's not separate from Krishna. Therefore, to him, it's still Krishna. It's an inferior form of Krishna. It's not the same as directly interacting with Krishna. But it's still Krishna. Right? Because how he's going to deal with his wife, it's out of scripture. You see Kardama Muni. One is, he goes to authority for the wife. He doesn't go out. He's not sitting over in the park over there trying his luck. Right? He's off in the forest, And he goes to the authority. He's a brahmachari. He goes, you know, by the grace of Guru, he goes to the Lord. And then he wants to get married, so something's arranged. The Lord arranges it. And it wasn't just, you know, he likes the girl, so that's it. No, it has to be the girl's mother, and the girl's father approve. Right? Then they don't just go off and elope. Now they follow the rules. They're married. Then, after that, then to see the quality means then they have to deal. They don't know each other well. They got to get to know each other. So affection will come with interaction. So interaction without having affection is according to rules and regulations. Right? Therefore, then he will do his duties to her, she will do his duties to him. And his duties basically means he's a yogi, so he does his meditation and his sadhana, and she assists him. You know, and he appreciates that assistance. So with time, that affection grows. And why it grows is because she has proven herself as a proper chaste woman with the proper qualities of being able to serve, being able to assist someone, being able to give up her own needs for the relationship. So that's the kind of qualities you want in your own child. Right? If the woman is self-centered, only interested in her own things, can't sacrifice anything for anybody, what kind of child is she going to produce? Because the son will take on the qualities of the mother. Right? So therefore you have to see that the qualities of the mother are correct. Then you see, she is a princess. Right? He is a Brahmin. She has given up. She is the granddaughter of Brahma. And her father is the son of Brahma. So as Kshatriyas, you can imagine the facility they would have. You can't get better than that. Right? So in other words, if you think of anybody as a princess who would have the fullest, most maximum facility and experience of a princess, who would it be other than Devahuti? Right? She gives that all up to be the wife of a Brahmin who's got nothing. Right? She's used to having maidservants that do her hair every day, grind pastes and ointments and apply them to her body. Right? You see later on when he was pleased and when she was sent into the lake, there were thousands of maidservants. Was she bewildered? No, it was just normal for her. 2,000 maidservants taking care of her hair and dress and nails and babies. What did 2,000 people do? But she could engage them, right? I guarantee you, take any of the women from our community and you just bring in 10 ladies who are really seriously interested to help them. They would be so overwhelmed. Right? And here she's got 2,000. Not only that, it's not even happening on land, it's happening underwater. And she's not bewildered. To her, normal. So she's given up that to sit under a tree with a guy and not even take care of herself at all. So that's chastity. Yeah, so therefore, that's going to be a good mother. Right? To that degree, the boy is controlled and sensitive, he'll be a good father. To that degree that she's chaste and satisfied, she'll be a good mother. Right? So she's proven herself. Therefore, the affection has come up in the heart by habit. Right? Because that's the Vedic recommendation. It's by habit. Because if the boy's too overwhelmed with the girl, then the girl's got it wrapped around his thumb. But if it develops based on service and interaction, then we have a very strong relationship. Okay, now what does he do? He's a Brahmin. She's a Kshatriya. Right? She's given up everything to be with him. So now, if he's just a simple Brahmin, that's all he has, then that's it. But he's a great, powerful, mystic yogi. right? He also happens to be the son of Brahma, right? So he's no small timer. So he has the mystic power to create facilities for her that's correct for her station in life. So he makes a flying palace that can go anywhere in the universe. And it's outfitted with whatever there is desirable in the universe. So he has that ability, he gives it. And he's sensitive to that. He doesn't say, well, I'm a Brahmin, she said, no. He has the facility to give her like that. He gives it. It's her facility, she uses it to please him. So the relationship's nice. So all that's being done because this is all how you're supposed to do it. These are all the Lord's rules. So he has this desire to function in this way, so he does it. So he just sees it as part of, you know, the lowest forms of sadhana. But in doing it connected to the Lord, it does remove it. It does go away. Right? Otherwise, how is it that as soon as Kapila says he'll take care of his mother, Pardama, in, I think it's in the same verse, if not the next verse, he's out the door. Because those needs have been fully removed. Okay? And now he goes back to his relationship with the Lord. So because of his performance of that sadhana was so nice, the Lord came as his son. Just to be also involved with. In other words, he's performing these activities, seeing in connection with the scriptures. So therefore, he sees that it's in that way non-different from the Lord. So therefore, the Lord comes as him. So it's just another form. So he didn't see any difference there. So it's just so much nicer the Lord has come in that way himself.
Other occasions, because when he comes to pay ransom, the investor is willing to give up all the rules of scripture just to keep Ram with him. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. So that is. Yeah. So that's there. But the one is, what was the approach to the Lord? Kardama. Is that I have these material desires that they get in the way of my meditation upon you. He's a yogi, so he meditates in the Lord. So that's his service. Well, Dasarat, then that, his service is as the father of the Lord. You understand? So it's like Krishna is in Vrindavan, but he also expands as Vishnu. Or he's Vishnu, and he is so great that he has these wonderful pastimes where he expands as a cowherd in Vrindavan. So the same thing can be seen from two sides. So, are you praying to the Lord that the Lord that getting the Lord as the Son because you want to interact with the Son, or you're praying to the Lord comes to your Son so that there's less Maya and you're getting rid of this material needs so you can go back to meditating with the Lord. So that's also why we see as Kardama's coming in the third canto, Ramachandra's coming in the third canto. Because the Rasa is deeper. I give it to Madhu.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm? Oh, okay.
I have a couple of questions. One is regarding the difference in function and what between Shiva and Sadashiva.
Shiva and Sadashiva. Sadashiva is Narayan in the mood of I am the destroyer. Right? Shiva in the material world is the demigod, that he is the Purusha of the living entity, of the material energy. So therefore he does enjoy material energy because it is his wife.
But Sadashiva
doesn't. No. Because with Sadashiva he's actually being with Ramadevi, but in that mood. In other words, one's in the mood and one's actually taking it up as an occupation.
You were using the example of a mother. It can be taken in different roles as a nourisher, yeah. as a protector, mm-hmm. as a chastiser. And you're saying the same
happens
with Vishnu.
Okay, so let us take the difference being the mother chastising her own child and her down at the daycare, where that's what she is. She's the disciplinarian of the daycare center. Is there a difference? The one is her job, the other one is her relationship.
My question was, the person is the same, the mother is the same. It's one, the mother, and she has different relationship, different roles that each child perceives the mother. So you're saying how Vishnu, you know, has that flavor as destroyed from Shiva and his,
Let us go back. Let's go back. The boy gives a rose to the girl. Is the rose the love? Okay. But it's an analogy of his love.
It's expression.
Yeah. So why does this analogy have to be 100% perfect? The analogy is given to catch the mood. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay.
Because I was thinking, it says
that's
the
point. Every analogy has its weakness because it's compared to something material. From a material perspective, is that it has a limit. So, technically, that's why it says the Lord cannot be described by words. But still, by being empowered with the chit potency, the words can be used as a medium to carry that potency that we can actually get the understanding. Does that make sense?
Clarify.
Okay.
Another question. This came up in class a few days ago. I'm not sure. It says the mind is born of the mode of goodness.
Yes.
Right? And intelligence, what is that born of?
Passion.
So in the Bhagavad Gita, why is it said that intelligence is greater than the mind?
Because it controls the senses. But if you want to have more fun, it means you've only had half the fun. What's higher than the intelligence? No. What mode does that come from?
That's ignorance. Oh, so it's kind of a reverse.
Because what is the actual point? Because technically speaking, it's one thing. It's the mind, but it has three aspects: mind, intelligence, and false ego. Because, we'll start with something easier. Okay, we'll start with the mind. What does the mind do? It accepts and rejects, right? What you accept is what you do, right? And what you accept is what your identity is, right? Okay, so what does the intelligence do? It points out what are your options. It never chooses, right? So who chooses? Mind. Okay, and your ego of what your identity is, but who's chosen it? Right? So now, is the perfection to identify, you know, this is Krishna, and this is material energy? Is that the supreme perfection? Right? Okay, let's continue. Or is, okay, let's put it this way. Of these three, which you would consider more supreme? Being able to identify the difference between matter and spirit. Or, that's one choice. Or to identify yourself as servant of God. Or to be attracted and attached to God and want to express that attachment to God. Which of those three would be superior? Okay. So that means those other two are actually in support of the third. Right? So the reason the other two are superior is on the material platform. Because if the mind is attached to material energy, the soul is in big trouble. But if the mind is attached to Krishna, bingo. Right? So to get out of material energy, therefore the working with the intelligence and the false ego, removing the false ego and working with the intelligence is the superior position. But once you've crossed that, you've crossed you've come to the platform of liberation, then the false ego and the material intelligence have no importance. Right? Then it's affection that has importance. So bhava is you're neutral but positive, but favorable towards attachment to the Lord. Right? Then if that drive is enough, then in the association of the Lord's eternal associates, then that affection for Krishna dynamically grows till it comes to prema. Right? Then that means the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna. And then you engage the senses. So body, mind, and words engage the Lord's service. So body means the ego. Right? Means the devotee. Yeah. And senses means, words means the senses. Senses means the intelligence. Right? How do you prove the intelligence is engaged in the Lord's service? By what you talk about. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you can perceive the intelligence through the speech. Right? You perceive the intelligence through the feet, or, you know what I'm saying? Or through the other senses, the eyes and this and that. You don't know what they've seen or heard or smelled or touched until they speak. Therefore, then the intelligence is the one that's... I mean, the speech is the symptom of intelligence. Right? And the body is your identity. You can tell someone's ego by how they walk, how they dress. Right? Means you can see someone from like way over there. You know? Down, way down there. That was male. Just by the way they move. Stuff. But you can tell it's female. You can't even see the face. You can't even really see the form, but you can see that it's male or female. Then when it gets closer, then you can tell what kind of male or female they identify as by how they dress, how they walk, how they do things. Does that make sense? Now don't get embarrassed. The whole Bhagavatam is one person asking the questions. So you don't have to worry. You understand? Otherwise, in this false ego, and that, then you have all these nice understandings, and then when the false ego comes up, it just kind of like wipes them clean. Does that make sense? So it's just like that. That's that. That is that question. Now someone else, but it's not a matter of oh, sorry, I'm just not all of that. Okay. You don't have to be afraid, because when you're afraid, it means you've at that moment forgot your relationship with Krishna. Yeah? It's not wrong to ask questions. The Lord also came as a hog. So it's not... Varaha is the Lord of sacrifice. So if hogging is connected to sacrifice, then it's not bad.
I can ask another question in relation to what you said about...
Doesn't mean you become proud.
No, just...
In the inverse. Oh, okay. All right, have mercy.
You were talking about the masculine principle, knowing that you're independent and giving up that independence.
It's not giving up the independence. It's engaging the independence in the relationship. You're not giving up the independence. It could be seen as giving up the independence, but you've independently chosen to, restrict yourself into this interaction. It's your choice.
I just
want to
see this on a mundane relationship between husband and wife.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mundane. That's
between
a henpecked husband and an actual real husband, is that let us put it this way. The external form of it will be no different. You won't see any difference in the external form. The difference will be in the husband who is actually henpecked. Means he's dependent upon the wife for his sense gratification. Therefore, he's willing to be insulted and being dragged through every possible emotional, you know, torture that the wife can do to him. And at the end of the day, he gets his hands on what he wants to get his hands on. Right? That's henpecked. Not henpecked is he has the need to interact with the feminine principle. Therefore, he in a religious way has taken on a religious wife, and therefore following the religious principles of what is the nature between husband and wife, therefore he's sensitive to her needs. Oh, let's say, since we'll put in an ad, you know, an ad, whatever, you know, a how you say, an expressive form of whatever it is, adverb or adjective, of her constant changing, never stable emotional position. So therefore, because you don't know what it'll be, you have to be there and be sense controlled and just wait. Take the neutral point. He does that. Does that make any sense? In other words, it's like this. Situation A. Day one. The wife responds in one way. Situation A, day two. She doesn't respond the same way. So he goes into it thinking, I'm going to be this or I'm going to be that. You know, the typical masculine, I'm the lord of the house foolishness. Then what happens? Day one, situation A, it went pleasantly. It went smoothly. Day two, situation A, if he takes on the I'm the man, then it's pleasant or it's unpleasant.
Depends on the woman's reacting to it.
We're not talking political correctness here. Is it going to go right?
Not necessarily.
Okay. We'll accept it there and understand that you've said no. But we have to give this proper gentleness of, how you say, the euphemistic expressionary state. Why won't it go right? Because the masculine hasn't approached the feminine on her terms. And what is the woman going to do? Why is the emotional freak out there? What is she trying to do? Take him and emotionally wrestle him into the proper state and she does what he wants. Right? And as soon as he does that, then like magic, it just switches from the most hellish situation into something very pleasant and interactive and caring in half a nanosecond, which makes perfect sense to the woman because he's corrected himself. Now we move on. To the man, it makes absolutely no sense unless he understands the science of dealing with the woman. Right? So therefore, the henpecked man, he comes in and just because he doesn't want to fight, yes, you know, yes, this, yes, that. But is the wife satisfied with a henpecked man? No. But is she satisfied with the same form, but the man is just sensitive and sense-controlled? The difference is the one is he just automatically is going into, you know, just doesn't want to make a problem. So he's still trying to control the situation, but from a negative point. But the other man is not trying to control it because he knows, how do you control something you don't even know what it is? Because from moment to moment, the woman doesn't know who she is. How will the man know? Because the woman's not saying it. So you can only go by symptoms. So that means he just goes neutral. And that's why he has to be sense controlled. You just have to, in a situation where your thought's going one way, you find out it's not, you just have to go neutral. And just stop any plans or any directions and just wait and watch and see what the symptom is. And just by going neutral, then automatically then the woman will go into whatever state that she's going to go into. Does this make sense? And when she goes into that state, then you can see, okay, now I'm supposed to respond like this. Does that make sense? Because he can't go by what's the external. Oh, how do you, it means today. Oh, how do you like the food? Oh yeah, very nice, very good. Like that. Next, day two, situation A, you know. How do you like the food? Oh, very nice. What do you like about it? You don't really like it. You're just saying that. No, I mean it. Like, because, why? It was nice to hear that he liked it. But does a woman ever leave anything the way it was? I got one sorry. That was nice. I am eternally satisfied. No, that was nice. I want that interaction of getting another sorry. You don't have to worry. They don't catch it. Like that. Or if they do catch it, they're thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about you. Okay? You understand? Okay? So then, it has to be increased. So now he has to explain why he likes it. You know? Situation A, day three. How do you like it? Oh, it's great. It's very, you know, he got, you know, the second day he explained, you know, because of the fine flavors and everything like that. Day three, situation A. Oh, how do you like it? Oh, yes. No, it's very nice and the taste is very good. But you said that about her cooking. No, yours is better. No, but on that day you said it was nice. You think hers is better. No? Why? Because he just wanted to take that taste of being appreciated and being needed farther and farther. Because if that's there, it's just like he could eat at home or he could go to someone else's house and eat something fancy. Because today he was just playing at home. There is a reason to go. And if he had to go, then definitely the wife wants him to go. You know, there's some business opportunity or some political, you know, benefits that the woman will get from it, something like that. But it's not. It's just a friendly thing, and he's going on his own. Okay, he could go, and she sees it is a good friend. He has known the friend forever, so I guess it's okay if you go. We're just cooking simple at home today. Like that. No, I was thinking to stay home. I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay with you. No, you should go. Okay, now if he goes, it's okay. Because it is a friend, it is things, there are ways to justify it. But if he says, no, I'd really rather just stay here and just, you know, eat whatever you're cooking. Now would that have been, how many brownie points would we have got for that? Right? Why? Because it proves the need. Because the man is, his point is, you know, the woman needs him, he sticks around. The woman doesn't need him, then he goes into independent mode. And that's called sannyas. Right? But the woman always has to be needed. Right? So it always has to be proved. The man, you've shown it, that's good. And occasionally, now and again, it may have to be shown again when he gets too distracted. Like that. You know, depending upon how much of a female environment he grew up in, you may have to say it more often or less. His mother was totally, absolutely controlling. You may have to say it more. If his mother was a little bit more, you know, less of that, and he got more of the masculine association, then she doesn't have to show it that often. Right? You know, in other words, she just has to find how much makes it work. Right? But for the woman, because her connection to the husband is her stability. That has to be constantly proved that he does need her. Otherwise, why is it the wife can tell, you know, every now and again. Generally, she only says when she's worried that she's done something wrong. That's when she tells the husband she loves him. Right? But it doesn't matter what goes on. The husband has to be constantly telling the wife she loves him. Okay? Does that make sense? Because the feminine is dependent. It has to be secure that... means, in other words, they need me, therefore... the relationship is secure. They don't need me. They don't. Right? Why do you think middle-aged mothers start freaking out? Because their children don't manifest symptoms of needing them anymore. And so they fight tooth and nail to establish their dependency. And they don't care who they hurt in the process. Because their whole existence is under attack. Rather than transfer their existence to other securities. It's supposed to be being transferred. As the kids grow up, it's supposed to be transferred more and more to Krishna, more and more to the service, more and more to, where you're somebody that you're always with. No. It just means that you're with them all the time and it's a good interaction. It starts with a C. Companion. In other words, you transfer it more and more to companionship with the husband rather than conjugal. In other words, the friendship element starts to become prominent rather than the conjugal, because the conjugal is trippy. Right? Parental is important when there's a problem. But the actual day-to-day pleasantness of relationship is the companionship, is the friendship. As friends, you make your plans. You can't make any plans on the conjugal. It's too trippy. Like that. You can have kids on that. You can express deep, intimate emotions on that. But you can't make any plans on that. Absolutely not. Plans are made as friends. Yeah? So you start transferring it there. Because that's what the Vanaprastha is. Right? Is the husband and wife who are the best friends. They know each other so well, there's no trippiness. They can just do their sadhana and just go on so easily. That's Vanaprastha. Trippiness is there, that's Grihastha. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole point. So, therefore, the security is there. Or that the child has grown up now and now they're situated as grihasthas or whatever it is. They'll take care of me now. So now if the husband takes sannyas, fine. I'm still secure. But in that interim state between you're not confident in your relationship with Krishna or that companionship with the husband, then the children not needing you to cook anymore or dress them or bathe them, they can do it themselves, and in fact they want to do it how they want to do it and they couldn't care less about how you want them to do it. That leaves the mother in the lurch. So that whole part of her identity, where is the support for it? Is her whole meaning of that element of her existence is the need of the children. Right? So when that's lost, then depending on what it is, you have a desperate woman in a corner and all the fangs and nails are out, and watch out, it is bad. And they couldn't care less for position, authority, relationships, and nothing. Because her existence, in other words, if you're dead, you can't interact. So maintaining life is your first priority. So because they take this as my identity, that is their life, when it's being lost, therefore they fight. Does that make sense? Just as a side note, we run into that all the time. Just as a side note.
I was thinking about
that. You know? I'm just saying, but it happens everywhere. It means even though not in the Gurukul, they're out here in the community here, the mother is still freaking out because he'd rather be out with his friends. He'd rather go with his friends to the restaurant and eat that junk than eat what I'm cooking at home. And in fact, the reason he's at the restaurant is because they're at one table and the girls are at the next table. You know, and, you know, I'm female, so why is he more interested in those females? You know, so it's just kind of like everything disappears. You know, he could be in the house with you. No, he'd rather go out with his friends. Why? Because there's some connection to some other ladies. You know? And then that will only be go down if, okay, he's found himself one girl, and now I like that girl, and in fact she expects my authority, and I'm actually able to control her. Then it's, I feel a little secure. Say again?
Can I ask another one?
Another one, yeah.
It said at the time of conception, the
consciousness
of the man was very important.
Consciousness of the woman also. It's a consciousness of both.
But it's, I think it's stressed the man's consciousness is more important.
I've never heard that. No, it's both.
I remember, I thought it was the man. But now you said that.
Because the child, the son, takes on the qualities of the mother.
Right, so that's my...
It's just like this. Okay. Let us say, if you've noticed nowadays, I don't mean... Okay, you... sorry about even bringing up the doubt. Do you find that the modern Indians actually, these young people, the common people, actually have Indian features much? Or are they getting more and more Western features? If you look at them. They have brown skin. But you notice their ears and nose, they don't have those old noses and everything, right? Because who is the wife mother thinking of at the time of conception? All these, you know, Brad Pitt or, you know, one of these other jerks, right? Isn't it? Now... But the girls, you see, still look a bit Indian. Because the man's thinking of his wife. Or some other lady that, you know, but not necessarily, you know what I'm saying? So the point is it's both. It depends on both. Otherwise, you're going to get mixed. That's why it's said that the husband and wife should discuss what kind of child they want before they conceive it. Otherwise, if one is thinking, you know, somebody's going to stay at the home and take care of the family and carry on the family traditions, and the other one's thinking, I want a dynamic, you know, world preacher, you're going to have problems because the kid won't know who they are. I have so many, I know just from being in school, so many kids. Father's a businessman, mother's a pujari. The kid can't figure out being who they are. So what do they end up doing? Because of the Vaishya aspect, they have the wanderlust. Like that. But at the same time, it's because of the mother's side, then there's this thing of, you know, spiritual. So what do? They travel to festival to festival, and they take a bunch of saris and stuff with them to sell them to make the money to travel. So this way they found some way to connect the two. Because the mother and father were not on the same page. I've seen plenty of these kids.
So what qualities of the mother does the son inherit?
What qualities does she inherit?
The son inherit
means she's the field. It's like this. This is the example is given. The father is the seed, the mother's the field. Right? So you plant an eggplant in the field, it will produce an eggplant. Right? But now depending on the quality of the field, you'll get a very good healthy eggplant or not a very good one at all. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, you'll have the spirit of the father, but it'll have the nature of the mother. In other words, the father's a kshatriya, mother's a vaishya. The kid will be a vaishya by nature with a brahminical spirit. Dangerous. That means he'll want to make money off of brahminical activities. Right? So dangerous. But worse is the other way around, where the mother's higher. Because then he'll have that brahminical nature, but he won't manifest that, he'll manifest as a Vaishya. The other one will look like a Brahmin, but he'll have a Vaishya headspace. The other one, he'll be a Vaishya with a brahminical headspace. But because it's inverted, it's the perversion is more, so it's not that he'll be a sattvic vaishya. No, that happens when you have two vaishyas have a child that are very, you know, sattvic. Then you get that very sattvic vaishya. But the other one, then it's bad news.
So it's so important to have compatibility in terms of natures.
That's why it says nature. That's the point. Means you're dealing with, that's why they say Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Means if you're in an environment where people grow up and are in that, therefore you just do it off of the caste itself, off the Gotras. Because you know this is a Brahminical Gotra, and you marry into another Brahminical Gotra. It works. But nowadays, because we have this nice Khichdi like that, then you see what is the nature. Therefore, the charts are so important, because you can't see otherwise. You had nobility, you know, two kings, a king and a princess. They get together. You don't have to worry because they have similar nature, or the Brahmins and the Kshatriya. They had qualities, but in this age they don't even allow that, because Gandharva is not allowed now, because just because they're in the Brahmin family doesn't mean they're a Brahmin. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, therefore, you have to see the charts, you have to check compatibility. And if it's compatible, we don't care what species it is. It doesn't matter. If they're the same from the two things, it will work. So if you have a Western Indian, an Indian Chinese, whatever, it doesn't matter. As long as it's compatible nature. You know, if they're both Brahmins, they're both Brahmins. Well, Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Vaishya. Otherwise, if you're going to mix it, know what the weakness will be. And don't be bewildered when you see it. Because it will come. Right? You know what I'm saying? Westerner, Indian. If they have a child, it's not going to be pure white, and it's not going to be pure brown. So don't be surprised. Oh, how come it's not white? Or how come it's not brown? You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, if you mix it, it's a science. It's not a sentiment. That's the problem, is the Westerners are so scientific, except for when it comes to their emotions. And then on their emotions, it's just what I want is all it is. They're scientific by you know, their perception, but factually, they're very Protestant by their emotions. Protestant just means what's my mood, that's it. You know, Protestant means it's you and God. That's all. You know? That's all. And nobody else can get in the way. So that's the thing. It's my feeling, that's it. And so devotees also fall prey to that contemporary mentality. So because I like it, or that, who cares for the rules? You don't have to care for the rules. But the rules will act. It's a science. You take water and you can squeeze some lemon in it, even though you say, "Well, I don't think it should be. Why does it have to be sour? Who cares? You drink it; it's sour. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are. It works that way. It's a science. But the whole point is the science is based on the relationship, because husband and wife should be compatible, because you want to have a child that also is compatible. Right, you want to spend 20 years with someone who doesn't like you, or you can't relate to them. Right? It's a serious thing. It's not just, oh, I'm in the mood, you know, like that. So therefore, if you're in the mood, great. That's what your parents were like, and that's why you walked out on your parents when you were a teenager. So if that's what you want, no, I'm a devotee, it won't happen to me. Sorry. Go over there, and you can see it happening every day. Not one, not two. We're talking 20, 30, 40, 50 kids. And it's going on.
So is it possible to be materially incompatible? Be very different in how we perceive and how we act, but be spiritually compatible?
Yes, you can, even though you're materially incompatible, if you follow the science, it will work. It will work. It doesn't mean it will be smooth, but it will work.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? It's a science. It's just like, okay, meeting somebody you've never met before, and you use the principle of hi, how are you, and shake their hand. It works for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you have some friends that are very close, and you may not use that. You may use a completely different greeting, and it works there. But if you use that on someone else who's not from that group, it won't work. Right? But if you use the generic, scientifically approved method, it doesn't matter who it is that works. Therefore, if the man is sense-controlled and sensitive, no matter what it is, it will work. Because how long can a woman go on being nasty? How long can she go on before she just has to have pleasant interaction? Especially if the guy's not doing anything to warrant her being upset. She can't. Right? Does that make sense? And then you can invert it the other way. The woman really tries, then it'll work. The reason the relationship is great before they're married, and then after they're married it breaks down, is because the woman already, she got the guy, so she stops trying. That's the reason. Because the guy thinks what she is before marriage is what he's getting after marriage. He didn't know that that's the technique the woman uses to get the guy. And now we're down to reality. Now we're living together. Before I was, we'd meet on weekends after school, and our parents were footing the bill. But now it's like, you know, it's our bills and our money, and it's going to be done this way. You know what I'm saying? It's his money. He wants to take me to this restaurant or go there. What do I care? But it's my money now. You know, we're going to the place I want to go. Right? So the men don't know this. They're really simple.
So in our movement,
I mean, another probably euphemistic term for that would be stupid. You know what I'm saying? Is that men actually think women are a place of shelter for their emotions. They actually seriously think that. They don't know that the woman doesn't know who she is from moment to moment, so how could she actually ever give shelter to anybody in their life? But because they always are dealing in an emotional field, you have a think that there is stableness there. No, they're steady in that they will always be emotional. But what is the emotional motion manifest at this nanosecond that you cannot predict? So, therefore, men are a little stupid like that. Right? So, if you want things to go smoothly, you keep them a little stupid. Workably stupid. You know what I'm saying? Because if you cross the line too much, one always has to remember is the man does have one element that the woman absolutely doesn't have, and that's independence. So the point is the woman can push it, because the woman won't go away, because she needs to be there. But you push it, the man can go away. And it's not necessarily for another woman. If he's really attached to the need for a woman, then it will be. But if he's not, then, you know, women are the actual, themselves, the primary cause for the perfection of the sannyasa ashram. You know what I'm saying? Women are their own worst enemies if they don't actually follow the science. Because in the woman's mind, why would he go away? Because I need him, can't function, so therefore he needs me. So even if they are independent, the woman will always finesse it. That independent mood she'll always finesse. And only focus on his need. Because the independent part is scary. Because that means he actually could function without me. But I can't without him, so I will just focus on his need for me. So, if they're smart, therefore, they will know what is the capacity of the man. How much emotional torture can he tolerate? And not go one step beyond it. Right? And also know what is his capacity for giving. and therefore adjust her scale as, okay, that, you know, his scale is from bad to worse. So when it's worse, then he gets it. But when it's bad, oh, that was nice. Thank you, honey. You know what I'm saying? And then there'll be encouragement to at least stay bad and not be worse. Does that make sense? So in other words, the point is you know everything. But you can't not follow it. You can't get away with it. You know what I'm saying? Women know exactly what they should do and what they have to do, but they just don't want to accept it that that's what they should do. They won't think, well, I could do this and get more. No. The science has to be followed, and it just has to work that way. And if you do it, it will work. And if the man is sense-controlled, he is sensitive, it will work. That's why nowadays you don't necessarily have great weddings, because how many have been good brahmacharis? How much does the grihastha ashram support strong brahmachari training in our movement? How many women in this movement demand to marry a first-class brahmachari? No, they'll take anything. Right? As long as it's not a eunuch, you can marry it. You know what I'm saying? That's it. That's the bottom line. With that. Does that make sense? But in the Vedic time, it was the opposite. They're not going to marry something that's not a good brahmachari. Because if they're not a good brahmachari, they'll never make a good husband. They'll be self-centered. If they're not a good brahmachari, it means they're a mamby-pamby wuss. And who wants to live in a... You marry a man, you don't want to live in another house with a woman. Would you live in another house 24-7 with another woman? No. So you want to marry a man. So if they're not a good brahmachari, then to that degree you're marrying another woman. So that, to me, is the funniest thing, that the grihasthas make these comments about, well, everyone's going to get married, so let's be real. Yeah, let's be real. They're all going to get married. Therefore, we should put extra effort in making good brahmacharis and good brahmacharinis. If not, then, you know, where's the chance of having grihastha ashram? And where's the chance of having anything that they produce that's worth even training? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's like that. I've myself seen the difference between someone who has just joined and they're married and someone who has been a good brahmachari for 10 years and gets married and has a kid. There's such a difference between their children. Big difference. You know, not that training can't adjust anything, but I'm just saying from the start, there is a difference. Very different. Like that. So it's just, it's there. So that's why it's recommended. It's good. So all this thing is, oh, well, unless that, but the, I would say this would be my thought on why it may be thought that, well, if they're together with the women, they'll be better rather than if they're brahmacharis. Because as brahmacharis, they may develop sense control, but they don't develop sensitivity. And the woman, the interface between man and woman is sensitivity, is gentleness. Right? The man should be strong and powerful, but the interface should be sensitive. Right? You know, it's just like you have one computer and another computer, but the interface is the USB port. You know, so you want a powerful computer, otherwise, you know, you can't do what you want to do, but it's got to have the proper interface. So if the man's not gentle, so they've seen the brahmacharis are tough and rough, therefore, what's the use of the ashram? But that's the mistake. The point is they should be trained to be sense-controlled and to be sensitive. Sensitive doesn't mean mamby-pamby. Sensitive means thoughtful, acting according to shastra. Right? So therefore, we've got this fabulous pendulum swing, and I don't see that the grihastha ashram has improved one bit. In fact, the ones that I would say are good grihasthas are still coming from days of yore. They were married in the 70s or early 80s. They are outstanding. Others may be nice, but, you know, it takes time to see. But those are ones you can say, yeah, they have something going on. Right? And this all new agey stuff, You know, also people say all these things because their daughter still hasn't gotten pregnant. You know, she's still 13 and she thinks she's going to survive the milieu over there. But when she comes home, you know, pregnant, then they might have to rethink. But of course, it won't be their fault. It'll be the boy's fault, the boy's family's fault, the community's fault, the micromanagement's fault, the GVC's fault, anybody but their fault. But the point is that's why Krishna's trying to save us. He made the material world, and he knows how it functions if you're not following the rules. Complete madhouse. And he knows that if you follow the rules, everybody will be able to satisfy their desires, you know, according to their what they deserve. Of course, no one will be able to satisfy their desires beyond what they deserve. Yes, that is a given. The Western paradigm is I will get more than I deserve. Like that. Of course, that means at someone else's expense. But the Vedic is everybody gets what they deserve fully. That means there are areas that you have to be restricted in, and there's areas where you don't have to be. Right? The woman in the house, it's her kingdom. But outside of the house, it's the husband's kingdom. But the woman wants it both ways. Sorry, she has a breakdown in the relationship. You know, then why don't you take your Pooh Bear and go outside, you know, when you go to dinner? You know, at least he'll, you know, respond properly. You know, like that. But, you know, you want to take a person. Looks a little better than taking your Pooh Bear. So therefore, take the science and work from there, because from intelligence you can access the mind. Right? In other words, I wouldn't do this, but she does. And I wouldn't express it this way, but she does. So when she says this, it means that. So now I just know. So therefore, even though what she's doing is completely opposite of what is that, you know, then I just know. You want to go out and visit your friend. You know, she's making a whole tantrum about it, not letting you go and this and that, and you don't care anymore, and you always leave, even though he never does. Then that means that I would like to be with you now. So please don't go. Rather than, she never lets me go anywhere. You know, what is this? I'm a person also. I need my own time. But she needs your time now. And if you know the science, a woman never wants the man around 24/7 anyway. They get tired of them. They want to have space. But the point is they want the space when they want it. So therefore, okay, you decided you're going to change your japa now. The wife wants to talk now. Well, I want to chant my japa now. No, put your japa down, talk now. When she's finished talking, you've got the rest of the day to chant your rounds. You can chant 64 rounds, in fact. You know, but this way you're not even going to get in 16. Yeah? So that's the thing. You know the science, it works. And you know where the line, the woman easily knows where the line is on the man. The point is look very carefully at your justice factor. And actually, even though you mean this by that action, he doesn't, and just accept that. And so you adjust your justice factor over to match actually what he does. You know? Does that make sense? So, that he went out with his friends and he didn't call you in between, then, because he forgot because he had a good time, and he says, oh, sorry, you know, I won't do that again, then you let him know that you didn't like that, so that he will kind of be inspired to not do it again, but give him a few times to do it. But if you just go completely nuclear and it's the end of the world, to him, what's the big deal? Because push comes to shove, the woman does it all the time. Guaranteed, if the woman is with her friends and she's having a good time, there's no question that she will ever call the husband. She's only calling because she's bored. It's not happening. There was a gap in the thing. It was going great. We were watching the movie, and now it's time for they're arranging the food, and everybody went in the kitchen. I'm sitting here on the sofa alone. I call my husband. But if when the movie's going on, the food's happening, there's no question. In fact, if he called, he'd probably get a short reply. Oh yeah, no great, yeah, we're busy right now. But if he's down there having a good time with his friends and she calls, if he did like that, oh, you know you're walking into Hiroshima when that door opens. Right? So therefore, look at it, justice-wise, is okay, he defines it like this, I wouldn't, because the natures are different. So, but he does, therefore, you know what I'm saying? A equals B equals C. So I want A, but he's saying C, but they're actually the same. Principle same, very different detail. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that he has to be sense-controlled, sensitive. Sensitive doesn't mean namby-pamby. Sensitive means what it actually is needed. You know? So you cut through the crap using the emotions, not the intelligence. You use your intelligence, but it comes out of the mouth as emotion. That's sensitive. If it just is emotion in the head, comes out as emotion, that's sensitive, but it's not being sensitive. Because the sensitivity is about yourself, not about the other person. But if in the head it's intelligence, but it comes out of the man's mouth in a palatable, emotional presentation, that's sensitive. And the woman, she knows where the line is, she just has to not cross it. And if the natures are the same, then she knows the results from not crossing it. I mean, of crossing it. But if the results or natures are different, she doesn't know the results. So therefore, she doesn't push it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So both of them using their intelligence, you know, because a woman very intellectually applies her emotions. The man doesn't. It'll never come across. It means he's done something wrong. It gave you, let's say, 10 units of distress. Now you're going to act, it means you know what things or how to talk and act that will give him distress. And he's going to get 10 units of distress before you stop. When it reaches 10, it will stop. A woman will never do 11 and will never do 9. It's exact, they're very just. But the problem is, it's 10 according to their experience. Well, a man's experience of the same situation is less. In food, the experience is half. Right? Means the woman's experience of the food is double that of the man's. Right? This is another viewpoint of eats twice as much, four times as clever, six times as others, nine times as lusty. We're taking it just, that's the fact. But the experiences means food means twice as much to a woman as it does to a man. Cleverness means four times as much to a woman does to a man. Enviousness affects her six times more than it does a man. And desire is nine times more than it does a man. Right? If you think of it this way, then it starts to make sense from both sides of what I call the 9-to-1 principle. You've heard me talk about it. Because the experience for the woman, it's 9 times. So that means also for her, if you count it at, let's say, at 1 unit, it takes 9 of the man's units to actually equal 1 of hers. So the man's always thinking, I'm always doing everything. She's never responding. But she's only responding how much it is, because she, in one sense, she knows, means when it's towards the man, she knows that he only needs 1 unit. Right? And he'll get his unit when she gets her 9. Right? But when it comes to getting upset, then it's my 9 units goes back as 9 units. Because it's my experience. I share my, women share everything. So if they're happy, you share the happiness. They're not happy, you share the not happiness. Like that. It's shared. Men, they're happy, they share it. They're not happy, they don't like to share it. That's why it's so hard to get them to talk when they're upset. They don't like to share it. Because it's their problem, they'll work it out. You know, if they just feel bad, that's okay. But if it's, there's a problem, you know, with the boys who are down at the office, they want to work it out themselves. The woman only wants to deal with the emotional part, not with the plan to work it out. But the man thinks it's the plan is the thing, so therefore he doesn't share it. If you just share the emotional side, then it'd be nice. And keep the plan to himself, because she doesn't want to hear it anyway. The plan can be used as a medium for the emotion, but the plan itself, she's not interested in at all. That's his business. It's his problem, not hers. Yeah? Does that make sense? So the point is bottom line is, it doesn't matter what the situation is. You use your intelligence, you can make it work, but it just means you have to work that much more, and it will be that much less spontaneous. Because attachment that's spontaneous is much more preferred over attachment that is by habit, right? By working, you know, by interaction. So therefore, naturally, everybody wants it just to be spontaneous. But if it's not spontaneous, then make it you work by habit. Figure out what each other wants. Open up a very open, non-trippy platform of communication. Work out all your definitions. Be really tolerant that even though you didn't understand them, don't flip out. Find out what they meant by it, because it may just be the same thing but a different usage of word, you know, because the backgrounds are different, so words mean different things to them. Yeah? Like that. Does that make sense? So, do I need to finish the example of the 2, 4, 6, and 9? The application? Or means, in other words, he ate the food, the guys eat the food and it's nice. They don't talk, it means it was good. Because they just absorbed in it. But the woman wants to hear the appreciation of the food on the level of hers, but it's twice as much as what he appreciates it. So it's very hard for them to say, oh, it was so good, oh, that was fabulous, oh, that was just, the women say, because it means twice as much to them. Right? The cleverness, that it was clever, that it was sensitive, he wasn't sensitive in the situation, he did something stupid in public. That will affect the woman 4 times more than the man. Well, it wasn't a big deal, I just said this. But it'll be 4 times more painful to her that he just said this.
This is built in.
This is hardwired. Hardwired. I mean, it doesn't get any harder. This is God made it, and God said this is the way it is. The lady next door made a comment, you know, like that. And, you know, the man says, she's just envious, like that. Drop it. What's the big deal? But it's 6 times more of a big deal than it is to him. That's why he can drop it. She can't. So if he appreciates that, then it'll work. Same time as he doesn't appreciate it, then, in other words, he should appreciate. In other words, he should be the one sensitive to these figures. But if he's not, then if you notice, because the difference, either he hasn't been told, in other words, if he's not doing it, means he's unaware of it. You have to find a way to tell him. If you can't, then you understand natures are too different. You don't have that communication, so therefore just tolerate. Because tolerance is one of the fundamental qualities. Intelligence, tolerance is the 6 qualities of people. That's how women survive. Went for those 6, no question they survive. It's too crazy inside that. You understand? Right? And 9 times with desire. She wants this, she wants that, she wants so many things. To him it's just, it's a sorrow. You know, but to her it's much more than a sorry. So it's 9 times more. So he can't understand. So if he's sensitive, he'll appreciate that. And if he's not, then you have to be tolerant of that. So in other words, either of them, through their intelligence, can make it work. If they're both working, and what we've given is that if one party's doing it, you can make it work. Though it's much more difficult, but you can do it. But if both parties know the science and are working, how much easier it is. But it's never going to be 100%. The maximum you can get on the perfectionist chart is 92% compatibility. That's maximum. That's like, you know, Shiva and Parvati. I mean, that's it. They argue. They fight. Radha and Krishna fight. You know, it's made like that. Because there is the element in a woman, she has to taste being upset. Even there's no reason for a fight, she'll make a fight. The guy's trying his best, backpedaling on everything he's just said. Yesterday was fine, this morning was fine. Anything he says, there's something wrong with it.
Some taste.
There's a taste to it. And because she's already a little annoyed, she wants to fully taste that annoyance. And just somehow or another, he happens to be the one that got in the way, you know, like that. You know, so, and he doesn't know what's going on. So if he's sensitive, then he knows it's one of those, and he'll just do his best to, you know, backpedal and be humble and do all the different lines and this and that. And then when, you know, it gets over and she's tasted it, and now she's normal again, and he just goes, phew, what was that? You know, it's like kind of like, you know, like, what is it? You know, that song about the what's it? I can't remember, it's been so long, about the men coming in, the little men coming in with the white coats, going to the funny farm. Remember? It's old. So, you know, so, like that. Whatever it is, you just think, you know, it's just like, you know, this was another, you know, clinical moment, you know? Like that. Understood? Because that's standard what goes on side. It's just now and again what the lady knows. Another thing, what is there, that is a very important thing to consider, is the opposite on many, on basically the opposite in the application. The man is generally tends to be a little more rough in the beginning when the relationship's new, until he gets to know the woman and becomes more and more sensitive to it. And as long as the relationship is important for him, he'll just get more and more sensitive with time, like that, more and more careful. And so that's actually what's inside. Men are very soft inside. They're tough outside. But once you get inside, they're very soft. Women are the opposite. They're very soft outside, very, very sharp inside. So what happens is in the beginning, the woman is the super sensitive, you know, to this and that and everybody who goes through the door first, who does this, who does that, anything like this, and not say their own thing. But once she's got him, then she figures, now I'm confident. He likes me. He needs me. Therefore, I can show him actually who I am. And the more confident they get, the more wild it becomes. And then the guy's wondering, whatever happened to this relationship? What happened to that nice, sweet girl that, you know, we used to go and sit on the bench and talk and so many things? He didn't realize that that was the outside of that. That's the same girl. That was just the external. But now you're actually able to see the internal. So that should be factored in. Because, in other words, it's not that, but then if something goes wrong, then the girl becomes angry because he responded badly to her, seemingly to his perspective, dropping all consideration. She'll become angry because then that means he's not as committed as I thought. So then, then she becomes unstable. Because then once you bring in the not committed, it can go all the way to zero. In fact, he's having 20, you know, relations with other people, and I'm just a front, you know, all within, you know, 3 nanoseconds, you know, until some discussion then has worked out, and then he's, you know, taking the proper humble position again and everything. And then everything's okay, and it's like, phew, okay, and back to normal. But it should be considered. That's why there are certain rules of how much is there, right? I mean, just like, when the woman dresses or comes out, she doesn't show herself, even to the husband. Like that. Does that make sense? She doesn't, because it's disrespectful. Right? Why? It's just like this. You're just sitting with grihastha men. Known grihastha men. Completely attached grihastha men. Completely under the thumb of their wife grihastha men. Do you really worry how well you dress? If you keep everything covered? Think about it. Not really. But now let's say you're around somebody you really respect. Some senior devotee you really respect. You're going to be careful? Super careful. So actually, the showing of the body to the man means the respect goes down. But it's replaced by closeness, intimacy, this and that. But if there's nothing intimate going on, that she shows her body, means lack of respect. Like in South America, for the Latins, I don't know about Italians, but at least the South Americans, if, you know, you go to the beach and the woman whips off the top and dives in topless in front of the men get insulted. And it's like, you know, that means you have no respect for us. You know, it's just like we're not here. like that. You know, so it's you know, that's still a little bit that's there. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like that. They don't see you put oil on your body. They don't see you put cudgel on your eyes. Because these kind of things, there's more. Because a woman should put all her energy into her skin. A woman by nature is sensual. She is sensuous. So then she'll put it in the skin. So what's that going to do to the man? Or the cudgel is completely into the eye. So that's where everything happens. So it's like completely focused. So there's so many things that's just not done. Right? Men, they don't share the bathroom together. Right? They generally, if it works, they don't sleep. When they're actually one asleep, they don't sleep in the same bed. Because women, when they go, they just go to sleep. They don't have a bath. And you know they want to wake up in the morning and be Methuselah, so they don't want the men to see it. So they should have their own facilities, own bathroom, own everything. You know, they want to present. They want to be able to present what they want the man to see. And that's it. So the Vedic separates all these things. So in that way, then there's no embarrassment, and you keep the you know pleasant illusory drama going. How many times a guy waking up in the morning and seeing his wife look like a fright, and he'll keep that thing that she's the cute little girl. But if every time he sees her, the first time he sees her, she's all dressed and nice and everything, then it keeps going. These are important science. And the modern, oh, we don't care. You know, he's in the bathroom, you know, going to the bathroom, standing there, you know, peeing, and then you come in and use the mirror, and what's the problem? You know, there's nothing there I haven't seen. You know, so it's like, you know, get off it. You know, it's like, okay, you can do that, but it does break down that mystique of women actually being something emotionally, you know, that you can count on. It does break it down, and then how much you can break it down before it disappears. So the point is, in other words, don't break it down. The science is at least don't break it down before your son's grown up. You know, or you've decided that you can live alone as a widow, haribo, and you're like that. But if you need anything more than that, don't break it down. Because it will break down. It is an illusion. It has to be broken at some point. You know what I'm saying? So the woman always wants the man around. So that means there's more options for him to figure out that she isn't actually, women aren't actually what men think they are. That's why in the Vedic thing, it's more limited how much they're around each other. Does that make sense? Like that. So this thing to push, what's the big deal? They can always be together. Yeah, you break it down quicker. What's the average thing for modern weddings? Marriages, 3 years instead of 30? Does that make sense? So, in other words, you have to use these things to advantage. No, these are hardwired, but don't become proud of them. Oh, the guy's supposed to be sensitive. It's his business. But it's also your business to be satisfied. Right? Sense control and chastity go together. Sensitivity and satisfaction go together. In other words, if he's working to be sense controlled and you're chaste, then it'll work. It doesn't say women have to be sense controlled. It says they have to be chaste. Men have to be sensitive. Right? Does that make sense? And the man has to be, so those are complementary. Then that's the platform. Then the operation of it, the man is sensitive, the woman is satisfied. So if he's sensitive and trying to fulfill her needs, and whatever is the degree that he can do it, she's satisfied, it'll work. But if she's never satisfied, then you can never please. It doesn't matter what the guy will do. There's the idea that I make him feel more distressed because I'm not satisfied. Will work to a point where it just gets him going if there is something wrong. But if that's all he could do, then you're pushing it. You're going to lose either the spiritual life and eventually you're going to lose him. Because the first thing is he has his sadhana, his devotional service. And to satisfy more the material needs of the woman means more time. Means something's got to go. So what does that mean? So the first to go is always the spiritual. Right? And then after that, then they'll start, then is the occupation. They want them there, they want all this done, but they want more money and more facilities, which means more time at the office. If it's more time at the office, she gets less. And then because it's like that, she's more dissatisfied. She's got more facility, but now she doesn't have him. She wants him with more facility, but it doesn't work. You get him or facility. You just get what comes natural. He puts in 8 hours, what's he get? Be happy with that. You're not happy with that, marry someone else where their 8 hours is more fruitful. You know? This guy's to go to the office, 8 hours, they come home with millions of dollars. Other guys go 8 hours and they come home with $50. So if you're happy with $50, you marry him. If you want $100, marry the guy that comes home with $100. You know what I'm saying? Because then, otherwise, then, you know, that leaves you 16 hours to do other things. Otherwise, you're going to cut into that. And then when the spiritual goes, then naturally, then the material, they have less material tolerance. And they're more frustrated, you know, they become more angry when their desires aren't fulfilled. So it makes it worse. Then after that, then because they don't have the tolerance, then more and more, the woman's not pleased, so then she becomes more and more nasty to, if the idea of making him work harder, but he can't work harder, so then he sees, I can't please this woman. So therefore, you can either, in anger, just, you know, forget it, she's a, you know, whatever. And, or that, you know, he'll take it that, yeah, it's my fault, I'm not good enough, I can't do it. Better let somebody else who's more qualified do it. And then he'll walk out. It's just a natural pattern. That's why satisfaction is so important. Women have to work at it. Then they can maintain it. Then you get, you know, that degree of spiritualness, that degree of material facility, that degree of emotional interaction, care, all these different things. You know, so if there's some ignorance there, by pushing you can get the ignorance, but if it's not ignorance, if that's all the better he is, then if it's like just his nature, and it's going to take longer to change that nature than you're willing to wait, then that's the wrong guy to marry. In other words, if there's some ignorance there, he has been lazy, you know, he hasn't been whatever it is, but the potential's there, and I can tolerate taking however much time it takes to get him up to speed, then fine. But if it's a matter of, I want a guy right now who's dynamic and progressive, and this guy's not, then it's the wrong guy. Find someone who already is that. Right? But if we're in a position where now we've just figured it out after, you know, X amount of years that, you know, isn't he the guy that works down in the circus with the red nose? Bozo? Then you use your intelligence to just make it work. You know, better, you know, the famous political aphorism, better a known bozo than a bozo you don't know, you know? Like that? Huh? Does that make some sense? Okay, is that now workable? Yeah, so we haven't said anything that you don't already know. Maybe just that perception on the 2, 4, 6, and 9.
Yeah. I've always actually heard it misinterpreted, the 9 principle.
It's a fact, but the meaning of that is different. Because the problem is how it's misinterpreted is because the man thinks the women are into sex. They don't understand that they're into romance. So they think the 9 times was the 9 times more into sex. No. The point is the girl's 9 times more into romance. But if all you can get, the only way you're going to get even a drop of romance out of this bozo is sex, then the woman will do it. But the real thing is it's the romance. So that's the whole point. He deals gently and romantically. Then if sex is an element in the equation, it will come. But that's not, women don't get their pleasure from sex. They get their pleasure from romance. So this is why, that's why it would be misinterpreted that way. Because they think it means that. No, it means 9 times desire. It means 9 times need. It means two. One is that what they need is nine times more. So if the guy needs three dhotis, then she needs 27. You know, if they're equally matched. Not dhotis, sorry. You understand? So that's just, he has to know that. But at the same time, it also means whatever is gained out of any sensuality, the woman, the experience is nine times more, right? It means it's the lady making all the noise, not the man, right? Because it's just the intensity is so much greater. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of the principle is there, it's just how you want to do it. Because the masculine interpretation of it, they've missed it. And they don't know what to do with cleverness. You never taught them to talk about twice as much, yeah, but then that they can't always see it, though. They see it going home. You know, it's like they eat less, but somehow or another in the tiffin there's a lot more. So then you could take it by actual physical volume is that the need to have food there is twice. So they'll only eat as much or less than a man, but the amount that they got to have there to be happy is twice as much. You know, because it's for the kid who is also eating here, and in case he got hungry later, though I am making dinner, but, you know, the dog does like the prasad, you know, the next morning. Of course, the servers didn't get anything because all the ladies took home double the amount that was there, but, you know, that's a minor price to pay for the emotional option of, you know, that I could please my child just in case something went wrong and he did get hungry, you know, 2 minutes before I ate and there was some other reason or I couldn't cook, then yes. Like that. Yes, twice in the last 3 years, that occasion has come up. You know, so we're sorry if the servers at Prashad had to go hungry for the last 3 years, but, you know, it's a minor price to pay for, you know, the mother-child. You know, it is the best of all, the deepest, you know, of affection in the material world. So, you know, I mean, the higher principle is worth sacrifice. You give up a lower for a higher principle. Like that. So that's maxim. But have you ever heard anyone speak on four times as clever? Never, right? That the men can't figure out for being, so they just walk away from it. You know, it's like, you know, step away from the car. You know, it's like that. It's like, just they don't deal with it. Even the six times as envious, they'll just say they're envy, but that's all, they'll leave it at that. But generally they'll get on the nine times as lusty, because sex is important for them, therefore they want to think that actually it's a woman's into it, so I'm actually, you know, she's out there half dressed, and we raped her. She was looking for it. That's what she actually wanted. Otherwise, why is she dressed like that? No, she's dressed like that to prove to her friends that she's got it, and she could get any boy she wanted, but you're not the boy. You know, buzz off, do we, you know, so it's, it had nothing to do, it's to please the, it is what pleases the boys, but her motive is to show the other girls that she's got more of it. The boys aren't, they're factored in because it's what they like, but the generically, but the individual is like, hey, get out of here, creep. Right? So if they understand these things, then it makes it easier. Then girls are more careful. Boys are more careful. Everybody's more careful. Right? And then you won't have this nice, raging, Western, hormonal environment in which everyone thinks because they're devotees and then the Dom is going to go by and nobody's going to get hurt. People are going to be cut to shreds and they don't know what they're dealing with. And just because they're married and just because they figured out how to procreate a child does not mean they know anything what they're doing. Right? The only motive to even try is attachment. That's the only claim that the grihastha can have over those who are not married, that they got something positive. And it's simply because they're attached, therefore they're forced to find a solution. While those who are not, aren't. But those that do deal with it, they're dealing with it because it's their service. It's their duty. Therefore, their intelligence is clear, it's not clouded by attachment. So those who can do that are actually more expert at it than them. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. That's the point. I can think about it. I can tell you things that you won't hear from a grihastha. You understand? Because I can clearly think about it. I'm not supposed to speak, because why would I be speaking these things? What is my motive? In other words, if I speak these things to the women to train them, somehow or another, there's an ultimate thing I'm trying to get something out of the women. I've already tried it. The grihasthas are the worst enemies. I do, but if you speak together, there's things that you want to say to the women, or you want to say to the men, that you need the other party not there because of false ego. It means I can say exactly the same thing to the women and exactly the same thing to the men, and there's no false ego. But in a mixed group, because of the male-female dynamic, there's always the thing of, oh, we're not like that. As soon as something's said that like reveals too much about the women, they start looking around the men, did they catch that? You know, and the men want to ask things, and they want it like blunt, but and they want it blunt and intellectual. But if it goes out of the emotional realm into the intellectual, it's harsh for the women. Right? So the whole point is, if the emotion is not connected, relationship is not connected, the women won't catch it. So generically, you can explain a lot, but you want to get into details of application of this, then you can't have them together. And if you do that, then what's your motive?
So maybe it's better that the women listen to the women coming from another woman. Would that be better? The men listen to
but are the women thinking these things? No, because the point is, it's because it's mine. This is the reason that it's the weakness is the women. It should be learned from the women, but the women have to have got it from men. Here's the science. What makes a girl very confident and bloom as a woman? The support of other women or support of a man? So a father makes the daughter into a woman. The mother will teach the techniques of the science, but she actually becomes just a man. Now a boy becomes a man by associating with women or with men. So the whole thing, the whole science of this, it's the men. So if the men know it, it will work. Why? Because the intellectual aspect. Because the woman is the element of possessiveness. You don't deal with something unless there's possession or opportunity for possession. And once you possess it, it's yours. So therefore, it does what pleases you. Therefore, it wouldn't do anything outside what you would want it to do. Therefore, there's no need of explanation. Therefore, you won't learn these things. You'll learn techniques of it, applications of it, moods of it, of a woman who has understood it. She can give it. But the woman herself won't do it, because in the realm of attachment, she's attached, so therefore it will go fine. But for the man, it's not going right, so he has to figure it out. So they can move into the intellectual and just look at it, and they can make it work. It can come from a grihastha man, but name me that grihastha man. One. Only one. Name me that man. I hear it a million times. Oh, you're sannyasi, let the grihasthas take care of it. Name me that one man. Every man will use that. Everybody will say that. I have not seen it. I don't know of that man. Where is that man? Name it. Fine. I'm willing. Where is he? Nowhere. Because they don't know the science themselves. They may still know some aspects of it, but because what I've been telling you today, this is Shastra. It's Shastra. You know? And how many read the Bhagavatam and get out of the Shastra? Right? Who puts together that Kasyapa and Diti had demons for kids? Why? And why Hiranyakashipu? Right? What was the consciousness of the parents at the time of conception? His was Kashipu and hers was Hiranya. She had a sister who already had kids, so her prestige, she has position. That's opulence. I want that same, I want a kid. Only for that, not because I want to lick the kid. That will come also. But my impetus for it is because she's got a kid. So hers is the Hiranya. And his thing is, well, it's the wrong time and this and that, but then she does all these things. And then it's like, hey, Kashi, please. That's directly the consciousness of both parents. That's why I say it's both parents. It's direct, it's science. Right? Yayati's kid, Guru. Who is the one? Guru. He was the one that was the actual kid. Who is the main wife? Sarmishta or Devayani? Devayani was the first queen. The other one was his maidservant. Any of the first queen's kids made it? They were worried about themselves because she was just worried about herself. And Sarmishta, she was more of just, you know, I have no position, so anything I get, I'm happy with. Therefore, her guru is able to, yes, if that pleases you, I'll do it. This is science. So my point is the grihasthas should be teaching this. But they don't bother. They already figure they know everything. Right? They have masculine genitalia. Therefore, they're masters of the universe. They know everything about dealing with women. I've talked to them. I've tried to say this stuff to them. They throw it back in my face. Or, you're a sannyasi, what do you know? I've had it time and time again. Or I say, the women went like this. It says it. Oh, all the sex books and all the, you know, magazines say this. What's the big deal? You know, you're telling us some big revelation. So then why the hell aren't you following? Because of your masculine ego, you think that there's no need. You think you're already the cast me out of women. You know, I do it rarely, but sometimes I do it. I bring up a point like this, and then I'll ask the women if it's right, and if they think their men are doing nicely, and they all say no. It's too crushing for the male men, so I don't do it very. I do it with punks, but I generally don't do it with the masculine. Because I know I could ask, there's so many times I could ask, I know I just wipe them right out, but I don't. Because don't decide the minds of the people. So my point is, great, but where is it? Name it. There's guys that are doing it, but have they? Can they explain it? Are they playing the science? Right? Here, this is science. These women are supposed to be not so intellectual. Well, we've just discussed hardcore science. You understood it. Right? Because the method of describing is through the mind. Does that mean? In other words, we use the intelligence in the field of the mind. But for the men, we use the mind in the field of the intelligence. It's different. Am I stepping over the line too much here?
I'm just thinking, because you said you don't deal with the men, but you deal with the punks. I just had a suggestion. Why don't you just take all the teenage boys that you have? Because it's a big problem.
I wouldn't, because their parents wouldn't like it. Their parents are all nice, narrow-minded liberalists, and so then...
No, but they all have concerns.
They have concerns, but their concerns is how to... It's just like this. I'll give you an example. I read one... book. There was a lady, I think, and I'm not sure she wasn't in Colorado. She was a PhD psychologist. And she did a study on adolescent girls. And after the study, she categorized them all into four basic categories. I don't necessarily remember them all, but those who are like this very nice, intellectual, academic, new agey liberal. Then there were those, and then the other end were like the Asians, who were like very traditional, had standards, were religious, and expected their daughters to be like that. And then the two in between, I don't quite remember. There were those who were concerned like that, and then those who were, didn't even notice. They were just kind of, you know, you probably have your intellectuals, your mudas, you know, your kind of like... kind of somewhat traditionalist, and then those who are orthodox. After doing all the study and all that, their conclusion was, as those from the orthodox background, there was no such thing as adolescence. they already had values, they already had support of their family, they didn't have to find out who they were, and they didn't need the support of their friends to be who they were. They went through school fine. The grades didn't drop, they didn't go crazy, they didn't do nothing, they didn't lose their identity or standards. Right? And the worst were the liberal ones, where the parents let them do anything and it's up to you, it's your decision, but they don't give them any standards to go by. So therefore, then those ones, the kids, the parents don't give them really an identity, so they turn to their friends for an identity. And unfortunately, the friend's identity is different from the parents. And so then there's a breakdown in communication, it all falls apart. So this lady of her own decision is one of those liberal parents. She's an academic, she's liberal. And even after this whole study of all the teenage girls in that city, you know, in Colorado or something, or at least in that area of that school, then the conclusion was that the Asians actually like that. But then, you know, that grew. But then in her conclusion, she just twists, spin doctors it, that actually it can't be that because I'm a liberal and being conservative can't be the answer. So therefore, it's just, we just have to be a little more sensitive, a little more caring, like this. So that's my point. I can say whatever I want. But if the parents, that isn't what they want, it's going to get wrong. Here, take this. Like this. Girl, super shy. Stays out of the way. Always well dressed. Never in the public eye. I mean, never. Mother's marriage breaks down. Separate. Divorce. Still, she's with him. Mother then now, you know, in her 40s, girl is now in her early teens, decides to get married. Found herself a man. She can't handle it not being married. Asks the daughter what she thinks. Daughter thinks, yeah, that'd be nice. If that would make you happy, that would be really good. Daughter is thinking, okay, I have this relationship with my mother that's going on, and now there'll be a man that comes into the family that will take care of my mother, and if it's a good relationship, I'll also have a nice, I'll get some support for it. That's daughter's thinking. Mother's thinking, okay, I want to marry this man, but now, you know, because the daughter's already there, then there's that whole consideration, and, you know, I want that experience of interacting with a man. What do? Pack up the daughter, after the marriage, pack up the daughter, send her off to an ashram school halfway around the world. Okay? So then, what does daughter figure out? Oh, mother is just into what she wants to be into. It's her thing. It's nothing to do with me. I'm in the way. Because to be with her man, she's got to get rid of me. There's plenty of schools here. Right? So, and when she gets there, then there's other girls that are like that. And because they're running the ashram like a man's ashram, you know, girls, we can do whatever the boys can do, you know, like this. It's not designed to develop female mentality, Krishna-conscious female mentality. It's, you know, so-called, you know, out there in your face like that. Okay. So then when she comes home after a couple of years, she's decided what occupation she wants to be as a profession is a prostitute. And she makes it very clear by dressing in the most scantily way and making herself the most available. Even though this girl, 2 years before, was the shyest girl here in Miami. And why is she doing it? Just to get a man. Right? Now, it's not a problem. We could go in there and explain it and get it worked out. But will those parents acknowledge that? Will the mother actually take it that she just screwed her daughter's life up for herself? So that's what I'm having to do. Because the egos are so great that these, the egos are already as big as the universe, that's understood. Right? But when you throw upon that the false covering of the Western paradigm, then you can't work. So we'd like to. We've given brahmachari lectures here. 50% of who's in the class are women. They're coming on their own. It starts out with just a bunch of brahmacharis, and then the next day more women, by the end of it is more women than men. You have a grihastha, and the place is packed. There's probably 50-100 devotees. You have a grihastha thing, you only have a few people. Because they all know, what are they going to learn from sinners? They already know. They're the cat's meow. God's gift. I have a kid. I've been told, until you have a kid, you don't know what it means to raise a kid. You couldn't possibly do as good a job as us. Right? And they got one kid or two kids. That's of how old? What's their experience? Right? And we've gone to how many hundreds of kids? I got kids. I just had one of my boys who's just had his second child. But I can't have any actual understanding or experience because I never had sex. That's the bottom line. So the grihasthas, that's their weapon. Pull out the big sticks of I have a dick and I've had sex and you don't, and they bash you over the head and that's it. And end of conversation. If you want to say anything, then it's war. I'm just telling you what's the reality of what I go through. So therefore, nowadays I don't bother. And if the grihasthas, I have to argue with them for 2 days with the men before they'll accept that maybe they're the ones that got to be sensitive. Because they're the man, so it's the woman supposed to be following the man. He's the man in the house, why they're not submissive? The whole point, why should they be submissive? You're not submissive to her. You respect her, she'll respect you. You're submissive to her, she'll be submissive to you. But they don't want to accept that. I got to fight for 2 days. Why should I fight for 2 days? I can do something else more useful. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's like, why bother?
People find everyone on the same page.
No, but so those who are interested will talk with them. But this thing, I'm just commenting on this thing. Why don't you do that for the grihasthas? Because the grihasthas don't want, they already know. That's why the example is given, that story is given of that boy. He finished the Gurukul. And he was very proud. He was good. And he was very proud of his knowledge. So after Gurukul, before they get married, then there's a stage, they're called Snatakas. And they can travel and go to other teachers and other, melas and different things. Go to these big yagyas where all the sages come and discuss philosophy. To enhance their knowledge, because once they're married, it's very hard to travel and they have the responsibility. So whatever they want to enhance, postgraduate work, they do before they get married. So then he went to one teacher who he wanted to gain something from, a very renowned teacher. But this boy was also very famous for his pride. He was knowledgeable, but, everybody knew he was just too proud. So he went to the teacher and said, I want to be your student, I heard you're so good and this and that, and I finished my studies and I can gain something like this. So he said, okay, let's discuss, but first sit down and have a glass of water. Like that. So then he gave him a glass, the teacher gave the glass to the student and brought a jug of water, started pouring water. And when it gets to the time, just before, then you have that nod of your head, like, thank you, and that's enough, and that's all I want. He kept pouring, the teacher. Then it gets up to the top, which is just about to overflow. So now it's like a nod, like, hey, it's going to overflow, And he kept pouring. Now it's running off on the floor and everything like that. And then the student says, hey, stop, you fool, don't you see that the glass is full and it's running over? No more water can go inside? And then the teacher stops and says, that's the point. Your glass is so full, no more knowledge can go inside. So that's a famous Vedic story. So the glasses are full. Like that. So there's no room for it.
Someone's talk to you.
Yeah, there's those who are interested who are happy to talk, because my point is you're never going to have good results in the Gurukul until the parents are on the same page. That's what Prabhupada said, the third generation, they'll be special, because they'll be the kids of the second generation who went to the Gurukul. What is that? Like that, because then it's like now. The boy running the Gurukul, he grew up in the Gurukul, so he knows what it means. He knows what everything is, and he's been out in the outside, so he knows what's out there. So you're not going to get anything better than that. There's not a first generation parent on the planet who would know more than him. Can't. And not only that, he's going to get married now and have kids just so that no one can throw this stupid argument in his face. And the bottom line is that the last point is in Brahminical culture, age has nothing to do with respect. It's knowledge. So it's said if a Brahmin boy of 10 years old and a Kshatriya of 90 years old, because anybody 90 is automatically respectable in the community by everybody, come together in one place, then their relationship is like father and son. The Brahmin is the father. But we as bourgeois Westerners, bourgeois meaning Vaishyas, don't accept this fact. So until Brahminical culture is also appreciated, as a community we'll never grow. Because Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas work on Brahminical culture. It's the same culture. It's not Vaishya culture, Kshatriyas, it's Brahminical culture. You take that culture and use it for Brahminical occupation, Kshatriya occupation, Vaishya occupation. But it's not never Vaishya culture or Kshatriya culture. There is no such thing as Vedic culture. There's Brahminical culture. Then there's Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra occupations. Because Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, that's Brahminical. It's not Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, no, it's Brahminical. And that's called the spiritual. So that's the culture. Then how you make your money, that's just the Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, but your culture is Brahminical. So until that happens, then we're going to be stuck with this Western Vaishya culture. Even Indian Vaishya culture would be a little bit better, because at least there's guidance. You know, there's some respect for authority. Cross the line again?
No, I'm just thinking, I would have appreciated, but these are my own thing. When I understand something, I can really appreciate it. So I from most of the parents to understand the different, to really understand the philosophy behind the group. But for me, it's like a big, that I would really appreciate that. So
we try to.
We wouldn't mind.
No, we don't mind. It's in our prospectus that in the 3 weeks that the kid's trialing, that the parent is supposed to be interacting, we're supposed to be teaching the parent what actually we do. But we tried it once. We had a thing, we took all the parents, spent 3 weeks, you know, 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day, going through the whole prospectus, explaining everything. And then 6 months later, parents are blaming us for all kinds of stuff that we already explained. So they don't even listen because their parents are already blaming us. In fact, half the parents didn't show up, they just show up to present their wives. Oh, what's the big deal? You know, what are they going to tell us? So this pride, but it's part of our thing, is that it's training. It's a combination. The Vedas say mother, father, and teacher. Those three you have to deal with. Those three you obey the rest of your life. But our idea is mother and father. Teacher doesn't even come into it. It's not even part of our culture. You ask the parents, who do the kids have to listen to in their life? They'll say mother and father. They'll never say parent, let me teach you. If you're dealing on the spiritual platform, the teacher who's teaching spiritual values is 10 times more respectable than the father. If he's just teaching you mundane, you know, things, just English, math, and that's it, he doesn't actually deal with your life, then the father's 10 times more responsible and respectable than him because of the effort and everything. But if it's spiritual, it's the other way around. That's what Prabhupada's doing. So that's not even considered.
It's more important to teach the parents to make sure they understand.
That's why we try. And because we can't teach the parents, generally because of the women. The women are proud, so the men reflect that. so therefore we have a girls' school. We'll teach the girls. They'll grow up. They'll have kids. They'll send the girls. And as Prabhupada wanted this to happen, we're going to get it, despite the first generation. Kind of after the class, that Bhagavatam class, we can check because sometimes they interact with him and the teachers, and sometimes we just have to work it out. Otherwise, officially, we have to do something. If you have other parents who actually like to hear stuff, but who wants to hear? It's just like this. Your kid is a day student, right? And see, he's in the home. So for him, the home is normal. Going to the school is special, right? So when he comes home, he'll talk about the school, right? And home for him is not a distraction, right? So with enough time in that and maturity that he's comfortable, you're comfortable, he could become a full-time ashram student, but only after everybody's comfortable, right? And so that's progressive, being a day student. Compare that to the boys who were ashram students and who are now day students. So for them, the ashram was their fear. Going home is special. So therefore, where's their head at? And you tell this to the parents, no, just for a few weeks and then it'll be this, you know. He's sick, the doctor says he has to take some vitamins, right? Pills, right? We could go see the pills. And, but, you know, I think he should come home so I can just make sure he takes his pills. Right? For 30 seconds a day, she also, I say you can do it, but what's going to happen is he's going to start to become attached to being at home. Because he's never at home, you're not going to treat him normally. You're going to treat him special. So if he lived at home, he would have to clean his room. And he's a big boy now. He's a brahmacharya. Learn to help with the chores. Learn to wash your clothes. But no, now he's a special guest at home. She does everything for him. He doesn't have to do zip. And if he doesn't do anything spiritual, the mother's just happy he's at home. Right? Now, I'm supposed to say that back directly to the parent that your kid is completely non-spiritual now because of you, 100%, and it's going to fly. But it's a sign. We told her before it's happened. This is what will happen. We'll tell you the statement, step by step. You can watch it happen. But even though they watch it happen, they can't accept it because it's their son. It's a science. We're just saying, hey, this is how it works.
Why it was changed from the ashram to the days?
Because before it was, is we're supposed to work on a certain level of student. Those students, previously you could get some of them. Nowadays it's very hard because of the Grihastha environment. They just grow up in the most raging, crazy environment. How do you expect to get a child out of it? So, therefore, we had a thing within 6 months you had to be able to move into the ashram. But then we found that by doing that, then so many boys that either they couldn't handle it or the parents couldn't handle it, most of the time it was the parents, then it didn't work. So the parents would be constantly trying to find some excuse to get him home. Oh, he's got a dentist, we need to check his teeth. We take the kids, you know, once or twice a year to the dentist. And we go to the same dentist the parents go to. We go in, see them, come back the same day. Doesn't affect their schedule. So then, but no, we've got to take it because we're the ones who care for the parents, and the school can never care as much as we care because, you know, we have the sex, you know? So, like that. So then, okay. But now, they'll take them home that day. They'll go into Calcutta. They'll stay a few days in Calcutta. And how do they go to Calcutta? They go in their dhotis, this and that. No, they go in karmi clothes. Stay at their karmi hotels, even, you know, non-veg restaurants. Go to the movies, do a whole thing. Fine. But then when the kid comes back, they're crazy. Because now he comes back, and from being the star in the house, now he comes back and he's just another guy that has got to wash pots, wash his clothes, clean the floor, go to his class, and he's not special. So you tell me, which of the two the boy's going to choose? And now if you do that every time, you know our parents are coming and going constantly for collection. Oh, father's going. Can he come home and spend 2 weeks? Oh, he just came back. Can he come home and spend 2 weeks? No, father's coming back. Oh, he has to come and pick him up from the airport. Why does he have to pick him? He's got a wife. Why she can't pick him? You know what I'm saying? It's just excuse after excuse. Oh, I heard him sneeze. I want to keep him at home. We've cured kids of typhoid. Right? Typhoid goes around the community. Our boys get it over there because of the environment. It doesn't spread. It's too clean. You can't somehow know they get around. You hear the kids always, you know, touching each other, sleeping everywhere. It spreads. We get the stuff because the guys go home. Yeah. We've had kids, typhoid, jaundice, malaria. It doesn't really go. We dealt with it all successfully. That's no problem. We're happy if parents want to take care of them. You know, fine. It's not that we can't take care of them. So, but their thing is, the point is I want my kid at home. Here's an option I can get it. Therefore, to do it, I'll make it look like the school can't take care. Therefore, their advice is given to me. I've had parents, they're trying to force our hand to give us once a month that they can take the kid home for the whole day and night. And we had this arranged by early brew hostels, 1990s brew hostels, with kids. They said, send the guy home after lunch and, you know, for 3 hours. Because if he comes before lunch, he's only coming for the food. He's not actually coming to interact with us. So that way we can sit him down, talk, actually have some solid interaction with our son. But they say, no, unless you, you know, put the kid to sleep and wake him up, you don't really get the real feeling. And okay, great. But we said, no, we want to do it where we have, okay, rather than do that, then we'll take a block and you do it once a year or twice a year or finish, you know, but this once a month, it disturbs the month. No, no, this, so then they made a whole thing, started to go on email how our academics stinks. And so therefore, they want to pull their kids out. Right? And they go to all kinds of authorities and stuff like this. Then, after that, then you know, you go and talk to them, well, what's going on, this, that, so many things. And then bottom line as well, you know, so well, then maybe you'd have to take your kids, but, you know, we can try to do this and that, because we're worried about the kids, you know, like that. So then the parents, okay, that and that. And then finally, at the end of the conversation, after it's already worked out that, okay, they could take the kid home for the once a month, then, wow, actually, we're really glad we had no plan, and if we'd actually taken the kid out, we didn't know how we'd educate him and all that, and this and that, and actually, just, you know, we're so attached to our son, and that, it's just, you know, just we wanted him home. Now, is that political? Is that nasty? In doing that, it gives us more of a bad name with the local authorities and other schools and people who want to find fault. But they would go to that extent to get us to agree to send their home kid once a month. I'm not exaggerating at all. That's what we have to live with constantly, not just once here, constantly. Right? All the boys went to Sagar Mela. Balaram didn't go home. Didn't go. Why? He told his mother to call us and say, because she's got cancer, he shouldn't go. So we deal with this constantly. The bottom line is, because we're all celibates, we don't know beads what we're doing.
It's a thankless task.
It is, but that's why it's given to Brahmins, not Vaishyas or Shudras or Shudras.
Damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, but the point is as long as in the end it works out, otherwise why should I sit here and do this service? I got half the planet after my backside. The Prabhupada wanted it, and the results they've gotten for the kids who have actually been in the system, they like it. So we're doing it for them. Otherwise, you know, I've had all my godbrothers tell me, why don't you just drop it? It would be the easier thing. because it's not that you get any benefits from it. I wash my own clothes. I do my own stuff. It's not that, you know, someone's taking care of us. So it's like that. When they say they want to do it, then they do it, and they'll do it for a couple of weeks. And then they'll go home and forget about it, and then I wouldn't have washed them anyway. So then I start washing them again. And then after about 3 weeks, and the guy who was washing before said, "Hey, didn't I used to wash his clothes?" Oh, sorry, you know, can I wash them again? Okay, wash. Go on for another 2 weeks, and then, you know, like that. So then, does that make sense? So it's not that we get it. People will say, "Oh, we're getting something out of it," but that's the grihastha mentality. That's the feminine mentality. Is that you only do some because you're getting something out of it? No, Prabhupada wanted this. And so somehow or another we have some understanding of it, so we try. Like that. That's what we're supposed to do, right? That's what a Brahmin's supposed to do, is study and teach. That's their duty, right? So that's what we
do. Because there's so many bad experiences, we just don't want to give anyone another chance.
That's okay, but then if they really were sincere about that, I would agree to it if they would stop getting married and stop having children. Then I would say you're sincere. But they go on and they keep having kids. And they they send them out to the slaughterhouses of modern education. And they go off and at 16, unmarried, they're pregnant. And then everything's fine. Everything's fine. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. You know? We got how many temples in this planet? 400? How many of them are managed by a brahmacharya sannyasi? Very few. So that means all these years, so we've had all these gurukuls, and we've had all this problem in the grihastha community and their attachment and their children and all that. Who were the authorities? Who were the temple presidents? Sannyasis? No, grihasthas. And who is to blame for all the problems in our society? GBC, gurus, and sannyasis. Not grihasthas. Never comes up. I know one case where a father was abusing his daughter, and then when she got married and had a daughter, he was abusing that daughter. Everyone else grumble about it, but it kind of goes by. I don't see any emails about that person. Grihasthas get out anything. You know how many kids over here are shattered because their fathers walked out of them? Shattered. I mean, I've just seen in the last 6 months a family. And the kids blame the mother that you don't know how to behave to keep our father at home. Like that. The girl is ready to walk out on the mother. It's going to go with the father. Right? And we say, hey, give him to us for some time. We'll try to work something out. The kid's with the mother. But the mother then turns now the daughter against us. The only reason she has a daughter is because we've dealt with her. What to do? So, like you said, it's thankless task, but it's what we have to do. Like that. So it's just, that's what Brahmins do. It's like you have the Prabhupada tells a story, you have the sadhu and the scorpion. So the sadhu went down to the river to bathe, and he saw a scorpion in the water. No climbing. So he picks up the scorpion. Scorpion stings the sadhu. He drops it back into the water. It flounders. He picks it up. So this goes on for a while. Someone else comes along and says, "Why are you doing this? You know, because like that, you know, that you pick it up, it will sting you. So why didn't you just leave it?" Says, it's the nature of the scorpion that it has to sting, but it's the nature of the sadhu he has to show compassion. So despite all the trouble, that's what Brahmins have to go through. How much support is there for Brahminic compulsion? Right? You want to be, how many temples will take care of you, your full-time pujari, and do all this and that? One? Two? Or is that all the Brahmins? We're supposed to be creating an army of Brahmins. Right? So how much is Brahminic society? Somebody does your chart for you and works out a marriage or that, how much will the devotees give you? Oh, you're a devotee. I'll give them a sheet. You do a wedding for them, how much will they give you? Oh, yes, just, you know, it's a, you know, devotee, devotee. You go and install their deities. How much will they give you? Like that. So So that's the difference. In South, the Madhuas, when they go to the temples, you know, you have all the Grihastha Pujaris, and they always expect you to give money for showing the lamp, this, that, and all that kind of stuff. The Madhuas Sannyasis go with a little box with money in it, the Brahmachari, and they give it out to all, as they go and do the puja, they give them because they're Brahmins. That's per minute, of course. All this. Oh no, like that. I've seen one temple spend 5 lakhs to raise facility and dakshin for a group of outside Brahmins to install their deities. Well, when we came, and I think they gave us 20,000 rupees. Not to offend more, but I'm just saying this. Devotees will take, you know, another temple, they paid 2 lakhs. They gave us 10. Those guys came with, I think, 5 or 6 people. We came with 15. Those guys, they gave guest rooms. They put our boys underneath the stairs of the temple that were unfinished. It was a godown. That's our devotees. But the other guys are in guest houses. They were next door to me. Like that.
This is our own society, we're not supporting.
Not at all. Society. Otherwise, why do you think everyone's going for business? We'll go outside and pay $100 to an outside astrologer without blinking an eye. But to our own devotees, oh, he's only into money. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. So we don't support Brahminical culture. You know who has to pay for the painting of all this and everything? The deities. All this painting going on, the deities have to pay for it. Who runs that stall over there? Where does the money go for that? To the deities? To the temple. Who sells the Mahaprasad? The deities? No, the temple took it away from them. Call the support of the so it's like that anyway. Managers are just managers. Yeah, it's there. But of course, there has to be training. The Brahmins have to be Brahmins. But if someone is, they should be supported. If they're not, okay, let them, you know, go back. Like that in the Vedic culture. According to qualification, your donation gives that much return. You give you give charity to just an ordinary person, you'll get back in the future the equal amount. You give it to someone who claims to be a Brahmin, though they're not. They're born in a Brahmin family, but they're not at all. But they dress like one. Just that you've accepted them as that because they've said they are, you get double. Like that. So even that is someone who claims to be, you deal with them in nice that you don't, you know, you don't go out of your way, but you know, it's respected. Even they claim to be, because at least the principle of the Brahmin is respected. If you give, and if you give to someone who is trained in the Shastra and practices that, like that, you get 100,000 times the return. And if you get someone who's actually self-realized, it's something. So there is gradations there also. So when you say Brahmins, it should be those who are. So that's what we're saying. But the point to throw the baby out with the bathwater, Prabhupada is so careful to say that we don't do that. You remove the cataract, not the eye. So if there's been problems in the school, fine. Adjust that. But don't get rid of Prabhupada's educational system. Otherwise, then you saw right there in the purport just 2 days ago, it talks about genitals. Result of having engaged your generals and Lord's servant when your child becomes is trained in Krishna consciousness. So that means without Prabhupada's educational system, there is no Krishna consciousness to having sex and having children. None. Zip. Zero. But so the devotees go, we can't read in the schools, we can't find the teachers, so therefore we should just stop having kids. No. Now, in fact, now break down the Brahmacharya ashram. Oh, be honest, be real. Everyone's getting married anyway. What's this facade of the Brahmacharya? Right? Someone's telling me once they had parrots, and they were able to deal with them so they'd actually mate. They were comfortable in the environment, which is rare. They all had kids and they were all happy, and then somehow or another rats got in and killed, ate all the babies. Those parrots never had kids again. Because it's like, we tried, it didn't work, so we don't do it. Right? Before the Turley case, parents didn't care that much. They didn't care. It's only the Turley case that everyone stands out, oh, I care so much. Right? So why didn't they care before? Okay, now they've been educated, they started. Great. Good. But that doesn't mean we're the ones necessarily at fault. We work under our authorities. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Why can't we look at it realistically? What was good? Have you ever heard of anybody in any discussion on the second generation?
You asked to let us put a
Okay. Okay. That makes sense why he was around. He's the guy who does kirtan.
Guru bol rahe hain.
What was it, Kirtan?
Yeah.
Did he say?
I'm not sure if it was English.
Well, he's taking a basement.